Mini episode 187 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 187 of the FDH Lounge and another edition of the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider, our show within a show, which was merged into the FDH Lounge program a couple of years back. We already did a week one fantasy preview, of course, in the form of FDH Lounge mini episode 186. But we got a great one coming up for you here again today. A little bit of bonus coverage for you as we head into the NFL season. We're bringing on board one of our favorite guests that we have had on, not just for talking fantasy sports, I would say, but one of our favorite guests for talking sports throughout the run of this program. And we're very much looking forward to doing that again today. Again, it's a very active time here as folks are getting their lineups ready for NFL week one. We've just come off the draft and the auction season, presumably, with the Wednesday night start to the season. That is just about wrapped up. But again, daily leagues and weekly leagues are springing up. So there may in fact be some folks who are continuing to build rosters from this point on. But by and large, everything that is that you've worked towards all summer as far as building your team, by and large, the die is cast on that. And it's just a matter of roster maintenance at this point, and making whatever moves that you need to make, be they waiver wire moves or trades. But as we said, one of our favorite guests over the course of the time for the FDH Lounge for talking sports is also one of our favorite guests for the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider show within a show. We've been privileged to have him on a couple of different occasions. Love talking sports with him, and fantasy sports in particular, as we'll be doing today, largely with fantasy football. He is the fantasy sports expert over at Fox Sports. And additionally, you can find him at SwollenDome.com. I can only be speaking of Mike Harmon, who we welcome back to the FDH Lounge and the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider. Mike, welcome back to the program. Pleasure to have you on today. How are you, sir?
You know what? If we're talking, that means we're starting football season, and that's a beautiful thing. Hope you're well. We got a first game under our belts, a couple of big plays, and then a whole lot of yawning. But you know what? It's a game. It counts.
Yeah, it's good to have it back underway. No question about that. And reading through some of your recommendations for week one, I think you were right on the money on a couple of them, and figuring that the Dallas passing game was going to have some opportunities. How did that first game stack up relative to your expectations?
Well, I think, we thought, because of all the injuries in the secondary, and we even saw more for the Giants, that Romo would have a day. Then it just became a question of, well, how are those balls distributed? Didn't expect to see Jason Witten out there. Not that he figured much in the final stat sheet, but the fact that he was on the field at all, at least they had to pay attention to him, and that opened up some opportunities for Ogletree, who took advantage. And this is a guy that we've been talking about for a couple of years of, well, will he ever get a chance? Will he ever be healthy or really break through? And, well, at least for one day, he's the second coming of Lauren Robinson, but everybody's going to jump to the waiver wire and try to plug him in. We still don't know what that role is going forward. Yes, he had a big game, but, you know, in the end, Bryant and Austin, especially once Austin's fully healthy, which we hope he will be, you'll see him much, much more targeted there as we go forward. But certainly, on the other side of things, David Wilson's emotions and fumble loss, he was one of our super ninjas coming into the year, and well, that's not going to help him in Tom Coughlin's eyes with the first fumble out of the gate for him. And then Victor Cruz let a lot of people down. Six catches, 58 yards, all fine and good, but three drops, including a pivotal one, and everybody will point to, well, he got held on that other thing in the end zone. Doesn't mean he was going to catch it.
No, that's true. That's a good point. A lot of people are going to look at that fairly or unfairly over the course of the last couple of years. Another Super Bowl hangover and another case of the Giants not being able to sustain their success. And they're going to have to work to disprove that over the course of the season. I am struck by coming into this season, Mike. I saw that in two drafts that I participated in Labor Day weekend with my own two eyes. What a striking consensus that there seemed to be. There may not be a consensus on who's the top player, and that's almost invariably going to be a running back. There's three running backs in particular this year in whatever order, Rice, Foster, McCoy. You got Megatron in there, and then Rodgers and Brady. And that is something that, you know, I've seen all over the place, that there seems to be a consensus. You want to be in the top six. You want to get one of those guys. And the leagues that I was in, they can be a little bit unpredictable. And yet, both nights, though there was not a question that there was a big cliff after those six guys. It really seemed to be the thought. What are your thoughts on that this year, and if it makes this year that much different than the last couple of years as far as where it's critical to be drafting in the first round?
Yeah, I think the big wild card to the whole equation in that first six, seven picks is how much you like or dislike Chris Johnson, how much you feel like you got burned by him last year. Because if you feel like he's back and in shape and ready to run, I think he becomes that de facto number four. But then going into the running back position from there, you start getting into, well, is there a vulture to steal goal line situations like Matt Forte has with Michael Bush? And then you've got a litany of guys with injury issues from Darren McFadden. Obviously, DeMarco Murray ran well last night. That 48-yarder will be on every highlight film for the rest of the season. And I'm sure you had a lot of, well, whoops or whatever at halftime or whatever they can do in terms of highlight shows. But, you just keep going on the list between Lynch's back issues and Richardson's knee and Adrian Peterson coming back. You know, there's just not a lot of running backs that you just say, you know what, I trust this guy. Fully Ryan Matthews still in bubble wrap. With the quarterback position, I'm one that still thinks it's a little deeper perhaps than most, that in the end, if I don't charge out of the gate and get Rodgers or Brady, I have Brady 1 and Rodgers 1A, and then number 3, Drew Brees. I don't feel like I need to necessarily jump on board immediately, but you know, that was the trend this year, is that everybody had those four or five quarterbacks coming off the board, with Stafford and Newton being 4 and 5 by the middle of the second round. And we'll see how it plays out, what that, you know, draft value proposition is when it's all said and done.
It's very interesting that you mentioned those guys 4 and 5, because when you start getting into it, I was in a draft where you had Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers beyond that, and it was a situation where those guys really were dropping, and I wonder how many leagues that happened in this past year across America, where if you held back and you waited till the fourth, fifth round maybe on those guys, you might be able to get some value. It does seem like with the supercharged stats last year, and even a guy like Matt Stafford throwing for 5,000 yards, it did seem like from a little bit of what I've seen personally that there was some value to be had later.
Yeah, doing as many drafts as I did, and I think I did way too many. I'm going to check myself into rehab because of that this year. You know, like Michael Vick, a guy you used to have to go and chase, had an inconsistent and subpar 2011. How much of that was that they couldn't get the timing right with Jackson, Macklin, et cetera? How much were they banged up? And obviously the injury concerns of you're going into the year thinking, well, if I get 14 games out of Vic, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. But he was a guy going at the end of the fourth round, and he was, on average, the sixth quarterback taken. And then you'd go another round or so before Eli would come off. And then Phillip Rivers is a guy that I don't know that anybody has a good sense of what they like or don't like about the Chargers offense. You talk about the Matthews injury, the loss of Vincent Jackson, and I use loss with the air quotes as we go in terms of no question a physical beast when he wanted to play, but a guy between injuries and holdouts that I don't know that he was a guy that for North Turner was essential to keep around. Antonio Gates looked great when I went and saw him in training camp, dropped a lot of, posterior and looked ready to run, but by week 10, you know, how's that foot feeling? Can he finish the season? The guy that I love the most out of that squad, Vincent Brown, he's done till what, week 8, week 9 at earliest. So now you're looking at Meacham, Malcolm Floyd, Eddie Royal, all guys that have had injury issues or have been the third or fourth receiver in an offense. So not a lot of faith in Phillip Rivers, even though we love what Norv Turner normally can do with the pinball-like offensive numbers for that squad. Beyond that, you get into Peyton Manning, Cutler, Romo. Romo, a guy I think people got a lot of value on. I think the as much as fantasy owners recognize the value, there's just a I don't want this guy on my team factor with him that I think has pervaded fantasy lineups. And on average, I believe he was the ninth or tenth quarterback coming off the board.
Yeah, I think there's an awful lot of that, and I did see that as well. And somewhat concur with you on Rivers, and that makes me personally glad that out of the leagues that I was referencing there, with the quarterbacks that were dropping, that I ended up with Eli rather than Rivers, because it would seem like there's probably less questions surrounding him. I have to just get your input here, because I find feedback from participating in these leagues to be very interesting. A guy that I consider to be somewhat undervalued this year, got him in the 10th round in a 12-team league, and one night, 11th round the next night, Brandon LaFell. And I was accused a little bit of falling for some of the hype there. How do you see him as a potential breakout candidate in Carolina?
Well, you, first off, you're getting drinking the SEC Kool-Aid. No, just kidding. You know, we like Brandon LaFell a lot, and we talked about him a lot on our Sunday morning show on Fox Sports Radio. He's come up a bunch, and not just because one of my guys is an LSU homer. But, you know, you look at what Cam Newton was able to do a year ago, still threw for 4,100 yards very quietly. Everybody will point to the goal line rushing attempts and what he was able to do and what a mess that makes of the Stuart Williams Tolbert trifecta, and with Stewart just coming off crutches, you got to think D'Angelo Williams is a pretty decent number two this week going up against Tampa, but I digress. In a game that is blacked out once again. But with LaFell, he's a guy, if he can stay healthy, because we know Steve Smith won't, there's certainly going to be opportunities to catch balls if he's right, and if what we've seen from the preseason and from all the reports coming out of practice are that he's developed a nice rapport with Newton, especially in the down as a downfield threat. I mean, Greg Olsen, another guy that I don't think quite got the appropriate value tagged on him either. He died for a couple of years there in the Mike Martz offense. Decent year last year. Looks like, you know, the Thor replica could come up with a big year here in Carolina for 2012.
Yeah, I think he probably could. And very interesting about you mentioning Fox Fantasy Freaks there. As I mentioned previously when you've been on the show, a show that causes me to get the stink eye from my pastor sometimes on Sunday mornings, because 10 o'clock Eastern time, and I just have a hard time getting out of my car sometimes and end up strolling in a little bit late to Sunday morning mass because I'm enjoying it. And you mentioned about SEC there. I always look forward, Mike, to that guy that's the Alabama fan calling in to give the business. That was especially entertaining leading up to the Alabama-LSU game last fall.
Yeah, we're always a little nervous when BA decides to grace us with his presence, and that's why usually he comes in at a perfect time, which is going to be the second-to-last segment, which means people can finish listening, shake their head, and go in and say a prayer for us. You know, we call our own congregation on Sunday mornings for our 3 hours where we try to preach wisely about what's going on in football, and then people can go in and pray for the repose of all our souls.
Nice, nice. Yeah, and again, a show that is entertaining as well as informative, proving that you can do both. It doesn't have to be one or the other, and a very, very fun show to check out. One of the trends also for this year, too, I don't know, maybe trend is too broad of a term, but I'm seeing a couple of different teams that are looking at offenses, and we've seen it in recent years of the lead back almost being a thing of the past outside of maybe like guys you can count on one hand. You've got number two backs that are a much more active part of the offense. Some teams this year might be taking it to another level altogether. Kansas City looks like they want to put it back together, what they had with Charles and Thomas Jones a couple of years ago with Peyton Hillis in that role. And Chicago, there's a lot of brave talk about your Bears there, that it might be Matt Forte and Michael Bush trying to do the Mack and Biner thing from 85 and get 1,000 yards apiece. What do you think about some of these situations where a number two running back on a team could be about as valuable as a number one? Or do you think it could be a pitfall like where in Carolina, neither one of the guys seems to get as many stats as they should?
Well, I think the two that you referenced, and I love the Mack and Biner reference. That'll be great. We got to go find some pictures of them to put up on the blog now. I think both of those squads, you have very realistic opportunities here to garner huge fantasy numbers. I mean, Peyton Hillis, for goal line work. He's motivated after the lost year last year. Everything that could go wrong did. You know, you have him in a Kansas City offense that I was all excited about, and then all of a sudden everybody, I must have started a trend, because pretty soon everybody was talking about the Chiefs and what they looked like with Moyaki back, Charles back, and Dwayne Bowe finally realizing he just needed to get back to work. So there's opportunity there. Charles, he was my number one guy on the board last year, and, well, we saw what happened week two. So now it's a question of can we get them back in and finish, and Matt Castle, is he more the 2010 player than he is 2011? John Baldwin, does he take a step forward, et cetera? With the Forte Michael Bush thing, it's another example of, for the third straight year, the Bears go out and find a guy that they want to run at the goal line. And this time they've actually found the guy that can actually run at the goal line, as opposed to Marion Barber tiptoeing out of bounds and Chester Taylor just, well, basically taking a huge paycheck and not being a whole lot of good a couple years ago. So with Bush, he's a guy who's proven he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder because, you know, he came in and I guess the way they spoke to him was they were expecting him to be the lead, and they paid him, well, like a lead. One of the things that the Bears didn't have last year was a guy they could rely on. Khalil Bell had a couple of decent games, but in the end, they've got a guy that's a punisher down low, can do everything. So the 1,000, I think, is realistic. Forte's still a better receiver out of the backfield, but certainly going to lose those goal line touches.
And how does that conform in that offense with the possibilities now with a downfield passing game that they haven't really had in recent years? You've got the Cutler and Marshall chemistry being reunited from what they were doing in Denver. You add Alshon Jeffrey to the mix. How do you see all of that fitting in? Because, again, it does seem like you've got two distinctly different formulas there. You've got the power rushing game. You've got the two guys you can really pound it there on the ground. Forte also in open space when you get him the ball in the flat. And then you got the guys that can just go downfield and haul it in like they haven't had in terms of their receiving core in the last couple of years.
A couple years would be a gross understatement. I like you being very kind to what has been a tepid, anemic, pathetic Bears downfield passing game. Last year, running out a bunch of number twos and threes, as much as we like Johnny Knox and we wish him a recovery from the injury he sustained. You know, Devin Hester is a work in progress. He's a return man trying to become a receiver, and I think becomes much deadlier in the type of offense they're running now, particularly if that offensive line, Jamarcus Webb, the guy that everybody hangs a star on, that has to come through in terms of being able to protect Cutler. But the fact that you have a legitimate opportunity to not have seven-step drops, to get the ball out quickly, to throw a bunch of the Mike Martz nonsense off to the sidelines, and actually go out with players that can make plays. Now, Martz's offense would have been much more interesting if you had a Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey, but we'll just leave that to the side for now. I think when it's all said and done, you get a little bit of the downfield. That means Forte, his ability to run in open space and get – I mean, he's not afraid to go into the tackles, and certainly once he gets past the first level, he's got breakaway speed. So the potential for some big plays – is certainly there, and maybe you can get a couple of long touchdown runs. But I think on paper, it's hard not to be excited about the offense and what they should be able to put forward. But that offensive line is still a big question mark as to how they'll perform come regular season.
Yeah, that's something that's still up in the air. Won't know until you see them out there. And as far as the receiving core of the pass goes, yeah, the joke on our show always is that if you were Jay Cutler, you'd perhaps rather be throwing to Johnny Knoxville out there than Johnny Knox for all the production that they were able to get out of him. But as you said, hopefully he can come back okay and be healthy. We talked about Brandon LaFell as one possible breakthrough candidate that I was suggesting. Of the ones that you're looking at this year, of the ones that you've talked about on your blog, on the program, who are some of the foremost guys that you think are primed for a breakthrough in 2012?
Well, I think we look at the Giants game of yesterday, and you hang a star on Dominic Hickson in terms of what he might be able to be. A couple of near misses, obviously the one that Eli tried to lead him into the middle of the field. I've been trying to promote Reuben Randall, not to go on the whole LSU thing, but he's a guy that works well over the middle, 6'2.5", and is willing to fight and get into it in terms of blocking. So he's a guy that when I went and visited them at camp, kind of impressed at what I saw from him. As you go down the list, I mean, Leonard Hankerson has his shot in Washington alongside Santana Moss and Pierre Garçon. I just like saying Pierre Garçon. I talked about Jonathan Baldwin a little bit earlier. He's a guy who's got a great opportunity ahead of him here. You got to love the guys in Denver that are going to get their shot working in the Manning system, particularly Eric Decker. I think went a little undervalued on average in drafts. People got enamored with the big play after seeing the Demaryius Thomas strike. Nobody can say Demaryius, but or spell it. It's the biggest train wreck that we see each and every week in the Twitterverse, trying to figure out exactly who they're talking about. But the guy from the Broncos is what it's kind of become. In Pittsburgh, Emmanuel Sanders, another guy who hasn't been able to stay healthy with Wallace back, and obviously Antonio Brown getting paid and being a premier route runner is what they're getting from him, quick off the line. Went to training camp last year, and everybody just kept saying, watch this guy's feet. So we were on board him before anybody, and I think Sanders is a guy that could do great things as well. And then one final one, we go to the desert in Arizona looking at Andre Roberts, quietly a good season last year. Everybody's on the Michael Floyd bandwagon. You know what? A man from Fordham will lead them. With all the attention that Larry Fitzgerald gets, I think you get a little bit of an opportunity on the other side.
Interesting call. Yeah, going with a guy like Andre Roberts, I mean, that's the very definition of under the radar relative to a Michael Floyd who comes in splashy and supposed to be a second coming of Anquan Boldin in that offense. Very interesting clip and save there. As far as two guys that I have a concern as far as them being overvalued this year in drafts for completely different reasons. Want to get your take on this because these are two of the biggest stories coming into the league this year. One being Peyton Manning migrating out to Denver. It does seem as though there's a real amnesia about what drove him out of the game last year. And it almost seems like everybody's kind of taking his word for it that he's back healthy and found a couple doctors in Europe that were willing to vouch for him. And everybody seems to be signing off on that and accepting that, that neck is going to stand up to the first hit. Wondering about him. Wondering about RG3. I've seen him as high as eighth in some draft guides this year, which I just really found to be head-scratching. I know that Cam Newton, for a lot of people, kind of redefined what we thought was possible in terms of rookie stats last year, and that Andrew Luck, as polished as he is, may come in raring to go this year. But I have some real concerns about RG3 coming out of that offense at Baylor. And long-term, yeah, I think he could be great, but he just strikes me as a little more developmental than a lot of people are seeing him this year. What are your thoughts on Manning and Griffin?
Yeah, I think first we go with the RG3. I mean, going up to eight, I think that's just people trying to get their name out for being bold with a prediction. Because in the end, you've still got a guy who's essentially a one read and tuck it. So if you want to get some yardage on the ground, a couple of big strikes that I'm sure he'll, launch it to the moon and come up with a couple of big plays. I mean, I still like Santana Moss, the guy that was dismissed last year, had a pretty nice season. Fred Davis we like as the safety valve, obviously. But he's going to struggle. And with a running game that just seems to be decided by the cast of a die before the opening kickoff each week, you've got a problem there. The offensive line, question of how good they'll be at protecting, especially now that it looks like they've solidified things for the moment in Dallas with those cornerbacks, which means they're going to be able to get after the passer a little bit more. We always know that the Giants are like a great white shark. There's always another tooth to come up in that pass rush, etc. So with RG3, he doesn't have the body of Cam Newton. So the question of whether he can take the blows if he keeps trying to get out in space and try to make plays with his legs, I think we could see a little bit of a similarity to Michael Vick. I'm always cautious to go there because people try to read too much into what you're saying. But the stylistic, I'm going to get out and try to make plays with my feet instead of staying in the pocket looking for my second and third read, is very much evident in the early preseason snaps that we've seen. With Peyton Manning, he's a guy that he's upright. He's got a uniform on, looked pretty good against the 49ers, perhaps showing Mr. Harbaugh why, they really should have made a bigger push to replace Alex Smith with him. But like every quarterback, he's one hit away. And I have to believe he's back on the field, that he's not doing it just for pride and ego, that he really thinks he can play. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt there. And when I look at Thomas and Decker and Tammy, to a lesser degree, Stokely, Andre Caldwell, a guy that it becomes another one of those very deep ninja plays where we'll watch how many targets he gets out of the gate. Certainly timing routes and all the timing that he had with those guys on the mind meld in Indianapolis for all those years isn't going to be there right away. But I have to believe that if he's upright, particularly against the defenses of that division, he's going to have success. So he's a guy that I had seventh in my ranks, but whenever I was asked about him, just said, look, this just means that you've got to commit to come back to getting Cutler or Roethlisberger or Schaub or a quarterback that you feel secure with. If they rot on your bench, so be it. That means Peyton's playing well.
Good call. Yeah, you definitely would have to hedge yourself under those circumstances. And with the week one matchup against HGH Harrison and his headhunting on Sunday night, I guess we're going to find out real early if he is back and if he is going to be ready to go and can take those hits. But as we said, Mike, everybody, of course, can find your work at foxsports.com, swollendome.com, Sunday mornings, Fox Sports Radio, Fox Fantasy Freaks. Anything else that we didn't hit sufficiently, please take it away as far as where people can pick up your work or any other projects you're working on.
Always rambling, getting ready to go cut a couple of videos, screaming out some ninjas of the week based on the matchup. So keep an eye on that on the Dome. And obviously we put them out at Twitter, at Fantasy Freaks, at Swollen Dome, going into all of those, answering your sit-start questions and pondering the meaning of life up until game time on Sunday. So we're there for you around the clock, and we'll alert you to some of the other news, perhaps not sports related, but something that'll have you with a chuckle around the water cooler.
Hey, there's something that's set for entertainment also. Like I said, people can always get that on Fox Fantasy Freaks. Really appreciate it. And always love talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on, Mike, and I look forward to doing it again sometime here. Thank you, sir.
Continued dominance, my friend. Talk to you soon.
All right, thank you, Mike. All right, it's been great having on today the great Mike Harmon. Thank you for joining us, everybody. The FDH Lounge, FantasyDraftHelp.com, and Sire.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, The Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.